Roki Sasaki, it's officially decision time. Let's go. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday, January 16th, and welcome to episode 229 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm Jesse Burrell, joined as always by Jesse Tricio. And today on the show, it's Roki Sasaki, and he has to make a decision this week. And according to multiple reports, our Toronto Blue Jays are still in the mix. Plus, we have a few comments made from newly acquired Jeff Hoffman regarding his shoulder. And then we're going to take a deeper look at the outfielders and our catchers on our roster, see what to expect from these players on the field going forward, Pete Alonso rumors, and so much more in this episode. But first, Jesse, what's up, my guy? How are you? How are you dealing through the coldness and the winter and the blues of January here in Southeast Ontario?
Dealing with it as best as I can. I'm just looking forward to one month to go till they report to spring training, where you can smell spring in the air. Mm-hmm. I'm wearing the blue just because of the blue little represent the Jays, and also the blueness of this winter weather here in beautiful Belleville where we are. But yep. We gotta do what we gotta do with us Canadians.
It's a cold, crisp, minus 8 degrees Celsius outside. The snow is piling down, but here inside on the computer, we are dreaming of Florida sun and Blue Jays baseball. And as you mentioned, we are getting very close. However, Jesse, the team on the field is going to look a little different than the team we currently have now, with one more big fish to fry still in free agency, Jesse, and that is Roki Sasaki, who the 2025 international free agent period has opened. And on last time I checked, I don't think the Blue Jays have put pen to paper with any of the international free agent players yet. So therefore, they still have all their budget available for Roki Sasaki. Jesse, before we dive deep into the pros and cons and whether or not we actually think it's going to happen, I want you to give me a percentage chance you think Roki Sasaki ends up as a Toronto Blue Jay by the end of the week.
Well, knowing how the Jays are been always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Yeah.
And there's three of us. There's three teams involved, and mm-hmm. of course, who are the West Coast teams, which are the Dodgers and Padres. So it's like, and have two or quite a few Japanese stars on their rosters. I'm going to give us. I'll give us 20%.
Okay. 20%. Go on. Why 20%?
Just because of how many times us Jays fans, and everyone can relate, how many times we've been hurt in the last year and a bit of superstars possibly coming here and being a finalist with the Dodgers or with the Padres or the Mets recently. I'm just prepared to get hurt again, and it is what it is.
It's been a long last two off seasons for the Toronto Blue Jays, Jesse, and I think you are likely right. In fact, I'm going to put the odds at about 15% that Roki Sasaki ends up a Toronto Blue Jay. However, I'm going to lay out the case here of why he should pick Toronto instead of going to LA, instead of going to San Diego, and why he should come here. First of all, look, Roki Sasaki, no matter where he signs, which one of these three teams, he's not going to be making a ton of money. The most they can offer him is the max of their international bonus pool money, which is anywhere between the $5 to $6 million range, give or take a few dollars here or there. So making money isn't going to be his biggest thing. His camp has said he wants to go somewhere where they can maximize his potential, turn him into the best pitcher that Roki Sasaki can be. So when you think of these three teams, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, and the Padres, well, you kind of might lean towards the other two teams there in pitching development. However, I will make the case how the Blue Jays have not been good at developing pitchers. We have been very, very good at maintaining the success of our pitchers and getting the maximum out of some guys we've either traded for or signed. Like Jesse, you might remember the Blue Jays turned Robbie Ray into a Cy Young Award winner. We got our best seasons out of Steven Matz, out of Ross Stripling. We have maintained the success of a guy like Kevin Gausman, of a guy like Jose Berríos, have been able to maintain consistency. And Alek Manoah aside, these guys have been able to stay healthy and on the field and also throw a lot of innings, which are all things I think Roki Sasaki's camp might be interested in, and that could happen more here in Toronto than instead of the other two towns like San Diego and Los Angeles.
Oh, I totally agree. Like, if you look at the even the rotations and what I've seen of Belsusog, he want, like you said, he wants to make an impact and be that star. Mm-hmm. If he goes to the Dodgers, who is, he's probably their number seven starter. If he goes if he goes to the Padres, again, he'd probably be a three or a four in that rotation. So, like, if you look at it, like, the Dodgers, you have Snell, you have Glasnow, you have Ohtani, you have Yamamoto. It's like, where are you going to, like, since hockey's going to be your back end, you still have Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, who's coming back from Tommy John. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of guys. They have cornucopia of pitchers there. Then in the San Diego, you have Michael King, you have Dylan Cease for now, and who are two free agents
next year. Hugh Darvish is still there, yeah.
Exactly. Like, so again, their rotation is a lot deeper than, say, the Jays, where if he comes here, I feel like you could pencil him in as either number one right away or number two. Like, he is a top end. He'll be a top of the rotation arm, not a back end, like the where he will succeed in all that. So I feel like I agree. My hopes of him coming here are not that high, but if he does, the bet will reap the reward of what he can do.
All right, I like that point too. A lot of people in like national media are saying, well, if you had the choice to join one of these three teams, like the Dodgers are likely going to be World Series favorites again next year, and the San Diego Padres are definitely on paper a better team than the Toronto Blue Jays currently are. I get all that. But Sasaki is 23 years old, has a long way to go. You know, like there's a, I know it's unlikely to think this right now, but there is a chance that maybe the Toronto Blue Jays can be better in the future with Sasaki putting up ace-like numbers for this team. I get that. And one more thing, one more case I want to throw out about maybe why Sasaki should choose the Blue Jays is if he's not making a ton of money for his baseball playing skills on the field and he wants like the endorsement deals and stuff that will come along with being a high level major league player. Like you mentioned in LA, like he'd be the third highest Japanese player on that team behind Ohtani, behind Yamamoto, right? The Padres have Yu Darvish, who's pretty well in there, and Ha-Seong Kim. I know he's Korean, not Japanese. That's a different story. But if he does return there, there's that angle as well. In Toronto, he will have a large market. Toronto is one of the most international, multicultural cities in North America. So we'd have that. And not only could he be like a king of Canada, he could be king of Japan. He'll also get the U.S. market a little bit there as well. Like there is a ton of sponsorship ideas out there. And remember, just last offseason, the Blue Jays did all this work on Shohei Ohtani and how they would market him and how they would get the most media deals from him. They can likely do the same thing with Roki Sasaki and put it all out there and get him in there. There are a lot more reasons than the general media is putting out there of why Sasaki should choose the Toronto Blue Jays. And I think at the end of the day, he is giving this a more very serious consideration than just joining one of the Dodgers, the Padres.
No, exactly. Like you said, and also look at all the in California too, all the endorsement stuff that's out there, but there's also for a lot of stars that are out there. Like you have LeBron James out there. You have all the right. NBA stars that are there. You have Major League Soccer. You have all the NFL stars. They have all those endorsements out there.
Right.
If you come to Canada, you have a whole country. You have your Japanese market too. You also have literally one of the biggest wireless networks as your team's owner. Where mm-hmm. you are, that you can literally make, like, they can use you to market their products, which would be huge for them.
Absolutely. And nothing but money in terms of Roki Sasaki's pocket, if that is something he is truly interested in. Jesse, I like that call a lot, too. And let's not forget, Yusei Kikuchi pitched here for a long time, loved the city of Toronto. All reports say Munenori Kawasaki loved the city of Toronto. We have Gosuke Kato in our front office now, who maybe this is correlated, maybe not, I don't know, but could be a good reason he goes here. And I think I saw somewhere that the Blue Jays also had one of Roki Sasaki's old coaches now in their front office. I could be wrong on that. Don't hold me to that, but I'm pretty sure I saw that in there somewhere as well. And the Blue Jays have been on this guy for a long, long, long time. Roki Sasaki and company are not going to forget that. So just leave that all in mind as we get closer to a decision point from Roki Sasaki this week.
No, definitely. And like again too, like speaking about like even money coming into for the organization as well, possibly revenue for Sasaki if he joins here. The amount of Japanese fans that come to like the Jays games when like Otani and all those Japanese stars come in is crazy. Like I've been in a couple, like I've gone to an Angels game when Otani was on the Angels to see him play. Like it was insane. Even like when Kikuchi was pitching for the Jays, like there was a section from like a lyric called Kikuchi's Corner, like literally of like fans like celebrating. It's like this is in like Japanese players like are beloved in when they come to Canada and Toronto too, just because of like how like diverse we are, and it's great. And also one of the best Japanese restaurants in North America is in Toronto, but it's a little bonus there too.
Yeah, maybe he can get at that that restaurant that apparently Kikuchi had a private reservation for, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, on the Ohtani plane day. Who knows? I think it's all systems go. Roki, you heard it from us. You will love Toronto. Come pitch for us. We will make sure that you have, as much as is in our power, I suppose, a great time here with Toronto and with the Toronto Blue Jays. You will not regret making that decision if you come pitch for us. Jesse, any last thoughts on Sasaki before we move on to other stuff here?
If he joins here, you can pencil my name and gain one of his jerseys and probably yourself to go to your jersey wall that you've started.
Absolutely. I will absolutely be picking up a Sasaki jersey, maybe even in the native Japanese if that's something that's possible. But you can count me in if he arrives here in Toronto, which we really do hope he does. All right, Jesse, a lot of other Blue Jays news this week. And let's talk a little bit about Jeff Hoffman. If you guys were here, we did go live shortly after the Blue Jays signed Jeff Hoffman. We gave about 30 minutes on our immediate reaction of what is now the Blue Jays' newest or biggest addition of the offseason so far. Talked a little bit about what his role is going to be with the team, what it's going to look like. We did a little where we worried about him failing some physicals and whatnot. I don't want to put this out yet, but maybe next week we're going to have a guest on who's going to talk a little bit more about Jeff Hoffman and what this might mean for the team. So we'll touch on that next episode. But I wanted to give, or Jesse, I wanted you to give us your thoughts here on, we're now a week past the Jeff Hoffman signing. How has he settled in a little bit? Are you still as excited? Like, do you still think this is very impactful for the team? Just tell me your overall thoughts.
Off we go, as I was making those puns last episode. I'm still excited. I definitely think he will be integral and like a huge part of our bullpen that was known on this channel as the bullpen all year. I definitely am excited. And yes, there are those concerns about the two failed physicals with the Braves and the Orioles. But like we said, one pitcher isn't having like lingering issues. As long as he's healthy for the important start of the season and in the stretch run for like if we're in the playoff push, then I'll definitely be I'm fine with that. He's even said like it's a minor thing and some like something he's dealt with, like there's no concerns in his party. So him saying that is like my excitement and like hopes for him are through the roof still.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up that exact same point. Hazel May was asked about the injury with Jeff Hoffman and why he failed some of these physicals. And Jeff said even himself, he was pretty surprised to see that. He says he feels perfectly fine. He is not concerned whatsoever. So the fact that he is not concerned, I'm not concerned about it. And think about this too. Like, the Baltimore Orioles kind of have a history of failing guys on these physicals before. Like, I know it was a different era, but I remember like Grant Balfour had a deal with them that they walked out on. Yovani Gallardo had another deal they backed out on. Atlanta was giving them more money and a 5-year deal, but they wanted him exclusively as a starter. So we talked about, you know, if the Jays are just using them as a reliever, then it's not too bad. And also too, like, the Jays kind of have to take more risks here because we need to get to a higher ceiling. So we are willing, I think, to take more of a chance on a guy whose medicals might not be spot on or perfect just because we need that impact even more. Look, we saw Kirby Yates in 2021. He had arm issues. He got into 2 games in spring training before needing Tommy John surgery. Like, yes, that happened. But for every player like that, like I remember Masahiro Tanaka apparently had a busted elbow for years. And he kept pitching through it and going through it and was still productive for a long time for the Yankees. So there can be a success story here. The only note I want to say with Jeff Hoffman is that if his shoulder does start to bark at him at any point, whether it's in the spring or at any point during the season, you want to shut that down early, give him the rest and recovery he needs, because the last thing you want is what happened with like Jordan Romano last year, where he was feeling it at the end of the 2023 season, comes into 2024, can only pitch you 13 innings and is done for the season. That cannot happen with the Toronto Blue Jays this year. So as long as they maintain that, I think it's all systems go off to the races, as you say, for Jeff Hoffman in 2025.
No, exactly. And again, too, like if he starts barking early in spring, shut him down. Let him take the time and not rush him. Kind of like how realistically we rushed Gausman last year with right. his shoulder issue. Like, who looked good in his one like spring training start, but like we could see all year there it wasn't typical Gausman stuff. So like, just let him get the recovery. If it means he's out till the All-Star break, it sucks. But at least we'll get him healthy for the second half and the stretch run. And also, then again, too, we have two more years with him, too. So it's like, I'd rather be early in the contract than the final year, kind of like what happened with Ryu when we had him.
Right. And I do want to mention, too, in regards of Kevin Gausman, like, yes, he made 32 starts last season. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I don't think that shoulder was ever really fully healthy. He got better down the stretch toward the second half of last year, and his velocity started coming up a little bit. And he lowered his arm angle last year, which is usually something you see in a guy who is fighting shoulder concerns. Watch for that this spring. I do think a bounce back is coming for Kevin Gausman, but we will touch on that a little later. All right, Jesse, 16 minutes into this episode, there are some very big Blue Jays rumors going around on the internet right now, and I think we should touch on them now. But the New York Mets just signed Jesse Winker to a deal here, and therefore it has been known that they are fully expecting Pete Alonso to sign somewhere else, which, hey, that means good business for our Toronto Blue Jays. I have a lot of thoughts here on the polar bear coming north to Canada, if that were to be the case. Plus, there's some Vladimir Guerrero trade stuff maybe we should get into here as well, but Jesse, I just want to hear what your thoughts are on maybe we should make the polar bear come north and join the Toronto Blue Jays.
Well, his name just is suited for being up north with us. Like, I've been saying, like, since the beginning, like, yes, I kind of thought we wouldn't sign on just because it is the Jays and all the rumors with Soto. I didn't think we could afford him if we got Soto. But now that we don't have Soto, I've been really leaning towards it. You can even vouch for me because I've been texting you this since like after we lost Soto, and I've been a fan of Pete Alonso since his rookie year, obviously because he was unreal. But there was a guy named Aaron Judge who made his rookie season a little bit better. Right. But like Alonso, big power bat. If we do keep Vladdy, there's even bigger protection. Instead of like Santander would be great, but like Alonso is just a step above Santander. But then again, with all those rumors with Vladdy right now, it is an insurance policy. Kind of like I was thinking of the Jays traded for Josh Naylor. There's your insurance policy if, say, Vladdy goes and you can extend him long term. But, like, yeah, I would love Alonso and bring the polar bear to his natural environment too, in the Great White North.
Okay, let's put the Vlad trade stuff, let's put a pin in that. Let's come back to that a little bit later. Let's talk a little bit about exactly what Pete Alonso would be right now, because look, he is 30 years old, right? He is seeking a long-term deal. He's been an all-star four times in his career. Each of the last three seasons has had he's hit 34 or more home runs every year in his career, except for the COVID shortened season, which he was on pace to do it just then as well, right? But if you look at some of the under the hood numbers for Pete Alonso, like his exit velocities weren't as high as they had been in years past. He got into a more his batting average has kind of fluctuated a little bit. His OPS plus went from being like the high 130s, 140s down to the 123 range. All numbers, which would be fantastic on the Toronto Blue Jays. And even if that is on the low side, you are still getting some very good production from Pete Alonso. I've mentioned before that he is kind of, last season, he really increased going to the opposite field a bunch, which I don't love, but you know, the Blue Jays love guys who can hit the ball to the opposite field, whatnot. And I also think with David Popkins coming in and who's been really good in Minnesota with getting guys to hit the ball into the air to the pole side can only benefit a guy like Pete Alonso even more. So I'm intrigued. But some of the downsides I want to throw out here is that a big-bodied first baseman, especially if you're signing him 4 or 5 years, you know, probably isn't going to age well. But then, Jesse, like, there were some reports going on today that, like, what if Pete Alonso signs like maybe what the Cody Bellinger contract was, where it's like a 3-year deal with opt-outs after one or two seasons? Like, if we can get that, even at a very high AAV for the next few years, I am in on buying Pete Alonso at that price.
Oh, definitely. Like, I even texted you before we even came on. Like, why don't we do like a 1-year deal, kind of similar to what we did with Chad Green, where you have two different offers. Like, you can a player option club or a club option, the 1 year. And if he chooses a player option, then the third year's option is gone. And then he can go free agency after 2 years. Like, I don't see a downfall, especially that gives us the window with all our expiring contracts within the next year or two. Like, if he wants to walk in, like, we really blow up the team and start the rebuild, it would work perfectly. And yeah, give him, like, say, a 2-year deal, $60 million. So it'd be $30 million a year with an with the options. I don't see that hurting our luxury tax or anything like that, especially if, say, Vladdy leave for free agency or are traded. Like, it really won't push in that third echelon of luxury tax.
Yeah, I agree. And it's all going to come down to what he wants to sign. But obviously, like, he's a Scott Boras client. We've seen Scott Boras sign these type of contracts for his players before. Pete Alonso is no different. There's also a report, too, that from Bob Nightingale. Now, Bob Nightingale, take it for a grain of salt. but if it was to happen here, like, Vlad would go back to third base. He would play probably not a lot, but he'd play enough at third base that you could fit them both in there. And then also maybe have room for one of your intriguing infield guys, or maybe a Santander if we still go that route. And then all of a sudden, if you look at the Toronto Blue Jays team, who already is projected to be in the top half of baseball on WRC Plus, take another step forward next year. And then all of a sudden, that's kind of your recipe for how this Blue Jays team can be a top 10 offense in Major League Baseball again. I'm kind of talking myself into this, Jesse. I think I like it.
Oh, definitely. And like, just think about this, like, think about a line of construction right here. Obviously, we know it's going to be Springer at first, even leading off, even though we don't want it. But then you get Bo at...
I think about someone else. Go ahead.
Yeah. But then you put Bo at 2, Vladdy 3, Alonso 4, Santander 5. And that's a pretty dangerous... That's a little bit scary. It's almost reminds me of 2015 when it was Donaldson, Batista, Edwin, and shockingly, Colabella, who was one of the best hitters that year.
Justin Smoke, too, was good. Yeah.
Justin Smoke and Russell Martin, like, that murders really. Like, who are you going to pitch to? And then when they added Tulo, it got even scarier.
Right. And then that leaves the option, too. Like, Ernie Clement was a good hitter. Like, Alejandro Kirk can be a league average hitter. But what if then you now get a breakout? Say Joey Loperfido breaks out. Say Davis Schneider finds his groove again. Say Addison Barger can tap into that power that we got. All of a sudden, your lineup is deep. And like I said, it's a recipe to have a good offense. And that's if, like, Andre Jimenez doesn't even bounce back. Like, if he's just a league average guy who we know has upside for more, like, yeah. There is a piece here on how the Blue Jays...
And even, like, if Varsho figures it out coming back from his injury, too, like, in midway mm-hmm. through the season. Like,
yeah.
Like, so that Ross, you don't have to have Alton Kirk, who is Mr. Double Play, hitting 4.
Mm-hmm. There is a... Mr. Double Play, I like that. There is a very real path here for how the Blue Jays offense can get together. And we will see. We'll keep tabs on this. But I do hope Ross Atkins and company are at least exploring this Pete Alonso market, because the fit would just be incredible, especially after trading Spencer Horowitz out of this team. So I really, really like that. Do you have one more thought on Pete Alonso before we touch on Vlad a little here?
If we get, I'll say this offseason would be a success if we get him, and even, like, if we do end up against Sasaki, but even if we get, say, Alonso and a Santander, I think that, people would be ripping this offseason, but I think it'd be a successful offseason. We fixed our bullpen by adding Hoffman, then you had those two power bats to give protection to Vladdy. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be a success, and then adding the defensive stalwart in Jimenez, too, I would take an offseason like that any day.
Pinning back just a little bit here, Tyler Glasnow was just on the Ken Rosenthal talk foul territory, and they asked Tyler Glasnow about the pitch to Sasaki, because we know that a lot of the Dodgers players were going in there and they were talking about him. He just said, I heard he likes the Blue Jays a lot. Do with that quote what you will from Tyler Glasnow. I have no idea what to take of this. I have no idea why a player on another team would say that about another team. No idea, but that is something that came out of his mouth here. Do with that what you will.
Well, that just put a pucker in and puckered me up.
I've never liked Tyler Glass. I mean, I like him as a pitcher, but he played against us for so long down in Tampa. Then he was really good with the Dodgers. So, yeah. But as of right now, big Tyler Glasnow fan. Love this.
Fan favorite for now.
So we will see about that here. Let's pin back to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a bit here. And I want to bring this up because the Blue Jays did announce on when their pitchers and catchers are reporting to spring training, which will be February 13th, by the way. And then the full players workout, first one, it will be February 18th for the Toronto Blue Jays, which means that is the date that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. can potentially sign an extension, or the date that he made for signing an extension here. And Jesse, we've talked a lot this winter about a Vlad extension, what it will look like, right? A lot of the fans are thinking, well, we absolutely need to get this done. I can't believe we haven't already. There are some rumors going around about the contract the Blue Jays have offered, the contract Vladdy is looking for, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to take a look around Major League Baseball a little bit here and think about this, Jesse. The Mets just announced they aren't bringing Pete Alonso back. We've covered this. They now have an opening at first base in 2026. The Boston Red Sox, who have been another team, have been mentioned on several occasions. They are looking at trading Tristan Casas this offseason, which would clear up their first base spot. The Yankees have Paul Goldschmidt signed for one season. They will also have an opening at first base. And that doesn't even include teams like the Giants, the Cubs, the Padres, who all could improve on their first base situation as well. There will be a lot of teams lining up for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. if he were to make free agency in 2026. So let's discuss it here. Contract, trade, or let ride through the end of the season for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in 2025?
If the contract, I'll hit on all three for it. So if we do sign him, I've been hearing, like, everyone has been throwing numbers for what he wants and all that. Realistically, I think the best number for him would be, like, $450. Years or whatever, you can just figure out the years, but $450 million, I think that's the perfect number for him. Because just if you look at Bryce Harper, yes, he signed his deal as an outfielder. You look at the numbers of, like, what Matt Olson got, it was a steal of 8 years of 168. That's Vladdy's better than Matt Olson, in my opinion. People can think differ, but I'm thinking 450 would be the, like, with how the league is going and all that, and where he is up there with the elite. I think the $450 million is the in that range to be the $1 million. I don't think he's worth 500. I would, or 600, or even 700. 450, I think, is the perfect number. But if we do trade him, like the rumors are with the evil, I'll call the new evil empire billionaire Steve Cohen, who just wants to play a fantasy baseball with his roster, with the players that they're saying that could be coming our way, is pretty intriguing, and especially when it comes to the future, and also with possibility of Bo leaving in free agency too, so like it could help that situation, and also. But then, if we write it out, I really don't want it because I hate when teams do this. Like, we did it with, like, a couple of players in the past, too. It's like writing it out, then you lose them for nothing. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'd rather get something for them. So, like, I don't want to write it out. If they're going to write it out in the regular season, until the trade deadline, then you shop them. Like, I can't. I don't see the Jays being that stupid, but or the front office being that stupid, even though that's pretty choice with some of their decisions, to get nothing for either Bo or Vladdy.
Yeah, I've said this on multiple times, but the worst case scenario for the Toronto Blue Jays is that he leaves for nothing, and yet he's playing first base for the Boston Red Sox for the next 15 years. Like, that is absolutely worst case for this franchise. He's going to get paid, dude. A guy who's as young as he is, who had the prospect pedigree that he does, a guy who hits the ball harder than anybody else in baseball, a guy who's going to routinely hit you 300 with 30-plus home runs on the regular. Absolutely. Jesse, I have a tweet here from Ben Nicholson-Smith as of 2:40, so a little over half an hour ago. that just says the Blue Jays are actively negotiating an extension with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's their most important player in their lineup. Nothing, no news to report here. Like, he's not saying they're close to a deal or anything, but he's like, that's where the Blue Jays' priority is right now, not letting him go, which we've been here before. So I don't want to count, you know, you don't count your eggs before they hatch type thing, but that seems to be where the Blue Jays' priorities are with Vlad. And I think that's what we all want. Yes, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. here for a long time?
He's said it before, and there's times where, like, I can even say last offseason, I was saying just trade him because of how bad those two seasons were and extend Bo. But, like, seeing how much he's grown as a leader in that locker room, even as a person, like, just seeing the stuff he's doing and all that, and even during his offseason, realizing he needs to stay in the States and train at the facility instead of going back home to Dominican, I have grown more love for Vlad. I had a lot of it, but this past season showed me how much of a leader and how integral he is, especially that one series when I was in Boston, when he took the rookies all to the behind the Fenway, the Green Monster to sign. A year ago, he wouldn't have done that. It probably would have been Springer or someone like that. But he's taking that leader and saying, this is my locker room.
And I don't want to bring this up because this is pure speculation here, but also people forget in that 2022 season for Vlad, his mother was not doing so well health-wise, and every player could have off-the-field issues and whatnot. And I think people forget that might have caused some of his struggles if he, you know, can't focus on what's going on in the field. That's why it's important to get that contract figured out too, so he doesn't have that lurking over his head going into 2025. But I think we're all in agreement here, and don't be surprised if at some point between now and the next month we get a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extension here. I'm counting on it.
Oh, I'm praying for it. And if we add him, get that and add the polar bear, I don't know what I'd do, but definitely be an exciting show on him for us.
Optimism is definitely high for us over here on Vlad, on Pete Alonso, and still even Santander and Roky Sasaki, for that matter, if any of them end up Blue Jays. It's just going to hurt so much more when none of this happens. But let's be sure that the Blue Jays can get on board with one of them here. Some other news and notes here, Jesse. This is down on the minor league side, but after Hagen Danner signed with the Mariners after being DFA'd for the Toronto Blue Jays, we did lose Brent DeGuss, a right-handed pitcher who was DFA'd when we signed Jeff Hoffman. He is now a Pirate. Ben Sherrington, former Jays connection in there, maybe likes some of the similar things the Blue Jays do. Have fun in Pittsburgh. I don't think we're going to miss you too much, Brent DeGuss. And also, prospect TJ Brock has been announced that he is having Tommy John surgery. He will not pitch at all in 2025. We mentioned when the Blue Jays lost Hagen Danner that we had thought that Brock could be one of these interesting guys who could be pegged as maybe a closer of the future, has very good fastball, hammering breaking ball stuff. But he joins a list now of Blue Jays prospects who have great stuff, but are not able to stay on the field. Tiedemann, Barriera, Danner, who recently came back from injury. Adam Macko is another one who got hurt. It's just a revolutionary list now. Landon Moraitis is another one of Blue Jays who just have not been able to stay healthy, and this is just another name on the list.
Yep, and we're starting this new year, new season, just like we started last year with losing prospects front and center to good old Tommy John.
Exactly. And, you know, if it's this level, TJ Brock might have been an impact piece later in the season. He wasn't going to make the bullpen out of camp. But, you know, the Blue Jays bullpen was quite bad this year. And even after adding Jeff Hoffman and bringing back Jimmy Garcia, there is still, I would argue, more work to be done in this pen. You can never have enough pitching depth. And at least TJ Brock was a name who could have back of the bullpen potential that we now will not be counting on in 2025.
No, exactly. But I was listening to a different podcast and someone threw a name for a possible second tier, back end of the bullpen. Jose Leclerc. Leclerc. Yeah. We can probably do 1 year deal, 1 year 10 mil, just add that. He is close for the Rangers. Could be a nice little insurance piece in case Garcia or any of our back end guys, and did maybe find a way being the setup man for Hoffman.
Yeah, those are absolutely the type of relief pitchers now the Blue Jays should be going after too, by the way, are these guys who have flashed the high upside in the past. Bullpen performance is so volatile. I'm actually writing a piece on the Blue Jays bullpen. It should be up within the next few days here about all of that. And these guys who have that upside, who show they can put it together for 30, 40 innings at a time, are absolutely the type of guys you should be looking to get, because if they aren't good, you just cut them. No such thing as a bad one-year deal. Eat the money and move on and give the playing opportunity for somebody else. I like that call, Jesse.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And there's a bunch of other ones, but that was the one name they were really hammering for the Blue Jays to possibly acquire to fix that bullpen.
Absolutely. I love that call. If it does indeed happen, we'll be in touch and we will be talking about all that. One more piece of news, Jesse, and this has to do with what is happening at the Rogers Center. They just announced, I believe it was their club, 328 space they have at Rogers Center. It's down the first baseline. Apparently, they're entering a new bar there. They've got like private foods, a suite. It's going to be like field level views right down there at right field. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the bleacher bar they have at Fenway Park, which I know you were at last summer. I don't know if you had a chance to go check that out, but that's kind of the vibes I get from this. From the pictures the Blue Jays have drawn up, it looks like it's going to be kind of cool. Has its own little benches and stuff and whatnot. But you and I both know we've been to enough Blue Jays games that these tickets are going to be so expensive. They're going to be closed for a private function. They're not going to be in use for us to see. So they look great in theory. I doubt we'll ever get a chance, though, to go have a drink at this bar or see a game from these seats.
Oh, definitely. It looks cool. But like you said, with our budget and cost of living nowadays here in beautiful Canada, like we probably will be a little bit over range. Unless anyone else wants to donate it and give it to us, yeah, like we'll happily accept it. But like we'll just see the pictures online or in while we're watching the live games when they talk about it, or may walk by it and see it. But other than that, that'd be the only way us buds here will see it.
It'll be really cool, though. I like the idea that they're doing new stuff to the Rogers Center. Like, keep that up. That is something I love, and I absolutely want to see more of going forward. But, yeah, it is what it is, but kind of cool. Maybe, if anything, this just means we can get to go to the flight deck again, because I loved watching games from up in the flight deck at the Rogers Center. And maybe if there's just one more social space, they can open up that space just a little bit more, or so we can do that, or sit at the hot dog porch, or whatever it may be at the Rogers Center.
Oh, definitely. Like, we'll definitely miss hanging out at the flight deck just like, just even though there's no seats, it was just the atmosphere there was always a good time, and way quieter than the Corona rooftop with the band there.
That's exactly it. And it's a different vibe at each little section of the ballpark for what you are looking for as a fan. But either way, it's kind of cool. There is something for everybody, which I like. I'm excited to get back to the Rogers Center this summer. All right, Jesse, any last thoughts on that before we move on to looking at some of the players for the 2025 season?
No, but let's move on to the roster we have right now.
Okay, so now that we are into January, we can start looking. We're a month away from spring training. I thought this would be a good time to start looking at the roster we have on the field and start trying to project forward what our expectations should be for all of these players. So I thought in the last 20 minutes we have here, we can talk about the Blue Jays catching situation as well as the Blue Jays outfielders. Next week, we'll take a look at the infielders and the rest of the position player group, and then we'll look at pitchers as we go on, and then we'll get into like our spring training preview and stuff as we go on from there. But I thought this would be a good place to start, and let's start behind the plate, Jesse. The way this offseason has went, we didn't find a replacement for Danny Jansen, who now signed in Tampa Bay. So this is Alejandro Kirk's job, and the names he has behind him are Tyler Heineman, who's 34 years old. We signed Ali Sanchez to a minor league deal, a non-roster invite, and then Phil Clark is the next game behind that. None of those names really ring a bell to me or really feel like they can produce anything. So this is Alejandro Kirk's spot behind the plate, Jesse. What do you think? Do you like this move, first of all? Do you think we're done adding any more catchers? Or are you like, no, this is Alejandro, let's go?
Well, it has to be Alejandro and let's go, because yeah. There is some veteran backup catchers that are out there. I feel like the only way we sign one of those would be like last minute deals when like spring training comes, like starts up, and like there's two that are still out. I think at least one I know is still out there. Maybe two are still out there. It's Carson Kelly and Yasmani Grandel, who I really feel like the Jays will probably take a stab at more closer to spring training if they're still available, where they can probably get like a cheap deal, like just maybe a veteran minimum type of deal.
Yeah.
But right now, I feel like Alejandro Kirk really did show his last season. Like he improved his defense, was throwing out guys, which he never really did before, and started showing a little bit flashes of that Silver Slugger from 2021 season or 2022 season. And like it's showing flashes of it, but I really think we need to fix the depth of the catcher position, like, especially organizing. Like, there's Jacob Sharp in the minors, but he's still a ways away.
Yeah. I do want to say, too, first of all, I'm with you on the fact that the Blue Jays will probably add a backup guy here. I've said on other shows that I think they're going to try to find somebody who, one, can hit left-handed and, two, plays good defense. If you look at free agency, those two names are Yasmani Grandal and Reese McGuire. So I still am putting my name in the book that one of those two will end up as Toronto Blue Jays to be our backup catcher going into next year. But on Alejandro Kirk, Jesse, I'm actually very encouraged from what I saw, particularly down the stretch last season. Like, if you look at his full season numbers last year, just 5 home runs from Kirk, 253, and only 103 games played. But, like, he was really good down the stretch. And the thing I really like, too, is that the effort skills, like the skills you can train and get better on, all got better for Alejandro Kirk. You said he started throwing out more base runners. His sprint speed actually increased, which he's never going to be a burner. Do not get me wrong. But Alejandro Kirk, you know, started to run faster. And that is a skill like you can noticeably train. That means you are, one, taking care of your body, getting into better shape, which are things I like. His swing speed increased as the season went on, too, which means he's getting a little stronger, which means, you know, he's taking good care, proper care of his body. All signs point to me that if Alejandro Kirk can continue working on that throughout the offseason and into next season, one, to me, shows he's probably durable enough to handle a full catching one workload, and two, could get closer, I'm not saying he will, but closer at least to that Silver Slugger season than what he had the past two seasons.
No, exactly. You can really tell that his speed did, he increased his speed when he blew down the trough with that triple. Yeah,
he hit a triple. And, absolutely.
And his bat speed, and like, I've never seen a clip of him and his wife and like and child. I think they were at Disney, and he literally he looked a lot leaner than others, like other seasons, and like during even the beginning of last year, like he looked a lot smaller. So maybe he's learned the nutrition and figured out his body. And also, if I'm correct, I think he's like only like early to mid 20s. So like at that age, your body is like starting to mature into that too. So that could possibly be helping him too.
Projections have all of the steamer projections have Alejandro Kirk to hit 271, 11 home runs, a 120 WRC plus, which would be his highest in years, and to be a 4-win player behind the plate. I think if we get that for Alejandro Kirk, we will take that every single day of the week.
Take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. It's hard to tell batting order because we do not think the Blue Jays are done adding to this lineup, but where is Alejandro Kirk hitting in your lineup?
If in a perfect world, I would have him hitting either 6th or 7th.
Yes, I would agree with that. Probably above or behind Andrés Giménez.
Again, depending on like what the additions and all that, I would say
right.
I would have him ahead of Giménez, just so like if he can just avoid the double plays.
Makes sense. Put some speed and the lefty righty thing will matter a lot too with Alejandro Kirk. So I'm with you. We are feeling genuinely optimistic about Alejandro Kirk. Say for whatever reason he does get hurt or, you know, he's not with the team for any extended reason. Are you cool with riding with like Tyler Heineman, Ali Sanchez, Phil Clark, or is it gotta be one of these free agent guys or bust?
It needs to be a free agent or bussy. I do love the magician is a great like vibes guy in the locker room and all that, but he's not the type of player to like lean on or to help like your team succeed. You need that more potent bat, I would say.
Okay, I'm with you on that too, because I don't want to see Ali Sanchez get into any more than like 15 games for the Blue Jays this year. So if that's happened, something has gone wrong, which we really hope is not the case. All right, Jesse, let's talk a little bit about outfielders here, and we got about 15 minutes and a lot more players to get through here. So we'll kind of rapid fire through this a little bit. But the first one we've got to talk about is George Springer in right field, who I have a feeling we're not going to be as optimistic on as we were with Alejandro Kirk. 2024, down year for George Springer. Hit 220, 19 home runs, a low 647 OPS. And we saw like a major drop in things like his hard hit rate went to a career low. The ex-WOBA, the expected batting average all fell to a career low. The base running was still good, so I want to give George Springer some credit for that. But we even saw a lot of the defensive numbers, even with a shift to right field, take a drop as well for George Springer. It's, you know, it's tough to see a guy who's in his mid-30s now, who honestly, like, he lost more hair over the course of last season than I think I've seen people lose over the course of a year. So it does feel like the aging sign is kicking up for George Springer. And he was second on the team in at-bats last year, something that simply cannot happen. But I want to hear what your thoughts are. What are your expectations for George Springer going into the 2025 season?
They can't get my expectations can't really be any lower than what we saw last year. If he found the felon in youth and brings back like 2021, 2022 George Springer, where he was like the start, like fire starter, like for the offense and all that, that'd be great. The only positive, like he stayed healthy the last 2 years. Compared to when he was playing center full time with the Jays, like that's a positive that he was able to play in more games and all that. But he needs to find the fountain of youth and bring back that bat speed that made him the reason why we paid so much money for these 6 years of his service.
Yeah, look, the Blue Jays have said a handful of times that they were quite optimistic. They have some stats and some metrics that say George Springer is due for a bounce back. I would love to see what those are, because I do not believe it one bit. Even if you look at the course of his season last year, Jesse, like, it was George Springer got really hot for about 2 weeks in July, and which really carried his numbers to a weight. And even if you take that out, he was much worse than the 674 OPS that he had over the course of the season. It's just, it's hard to believe that a guy in his mid-30s whose ground ball rate rose, who a lot of the quality of contact numbers went down, it's just so hard to see a bounce back from George Springer. Now, look, did hit 19 home runs on the season last year, which I believe was second on the team, maybe third. So even if he hits you 15 and he's getting, you know, he's hitting seventh for you, and, you know, he's a good guy from all accounts, you can do something. But I think if you are thinking that George Springer isn't a high impact player again, you are mistaken going into 2025.
Oh, 100%. He's definitely a little more there, like, for the locker room and, like, the bet, like, and, like, controlling the music. Like, I've heard on different podcasts that he's the aux guy in the locker room. Like, he's more than that now, than being the George Springer of, like, the days with the Astros in the first few years with us.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say Davey Andrews over at jcenter.com, which you should absolutely be checking out their content, wrote a case about what if George Springer isn't cooked, and like, what does that look like for the Toronto Blue Jays? And I suggest everyone to give it a read. There are some things in there that say, hey, this could go a long way for a bounce back. Yeah, the case for an uncooked George Springer. We can link to it in our bio if you do want to give it a read. But it would be interesting, and there are some positive cases to be made for George Springer. Projections, Jesse, have him for a 110 WRC plus, 23 home runs, and a 244 average. All of those numbers would be as high as since 2022. Does he hit them?
I feel like he's not a 20 home run hitter anymore, especially with his fast speed decreasing and all that. I'm thinking maybe 15 homers, and that's even pretty high right now.
Okay, I'm with you on that, my guy. I don't think so either, but if that comes to form, we will gladly take that from George Springer in right field this season. But I think it's more likely he gets replaced by Addison Barger full-time, or even Alan Roden full-time, or dare I say Jonathan Class A full-time in center field. I think that's more likely than him, you know, being top four on this team in plate appearances again.
Oh, totally agree.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. And this is Dalton Varsho, who has been a key in the Blue Jays offense for the last two seasons. Now, note, does have shoulder surgery, might not start the season on the team, but is fully expected to be one of the most regulars when we come into the season. Last season, he hit 214, 18 home runs. Jesse, I wrote a piece on Dalton Varsho and his bats, and I suggest everyone to go look that up. And the case of like what it might take to get more out of Dalton Varsho's bat, because when we traded for him out of Arizona, he was coming off a 110 WRC plus. He had just hit, I believe it was 27 home runs that final year in Arizona. So the two seasons we've got since then have not been good. But basically, the case comes down to, with Dalton Varsho, nobody hits the ball in the air more than he does, and nobody hits those fly balls as less hard as he does. So that needs to be an improvement we see from Dalton Varsho. There's hope that David Popkins can make that happen. And I suggest going to read that article to read more. But, you know, Dalton Varsho does do some good things with the bat. He swings the ball very hard. And we know about the defense and base running. If the bat can just come around just a little bit, you have a true superstar center fielder in Dalton Varsho. Jesse, what's your take on Dalton Varsho going into this year?
Hopefully his shoulder doesn't keep him out as long as people are thinking. Like, that might be until the second half of the season. Hopefully he's back sooner, because his deep, like, his bat, like, he can have power. We saw it the first year he hit 20 home runs. Last year he was close, but he got shut down. Probably would have had 20 if it wasn't because of that shoulder. His defense is just, that's all really, like, his defense and his base running or like stuff that you can't really teach it. Like, he is showing that he is probably the best center field defender in all of baseball, and was robbed this year for a platinum glove. He rightfully got his gold glove, but should have had that platinum glove. I don't care what people say about Cal Raleigh. Transfer from Coach Sons podcast, you might think different, but no, Cal Raleigh did not deserve that platinum glove. It was rightfully so. It should have been to Dalton Varsho.
I will agree with you very much. What we get at the plate from Varsho this season, I think, is going to be the difference here. But, like, the defense is going to be immaculate no matter what. The base running is going to be good no matter what. Like, it's that stuff just doesn't fall off a cliff, even with the busted shoulder, which I guess he played with for quite a bit last year down the stretch. Yeah, we will see. It'll be worth noting. I'm excited to see what Popkins can do with Varsho. They seem like to be a good hand in hand. And if we can get 25 home runs out of Dalton Varsho this year, again, that'll go from the Blue Jays being 26 and runs scored to put him in the top half of baseball, which is all very something we want. His offensive performance, I believe, is going to be one of the biggest X factors for the Toronto Blue Jays this year.
Oh, definitely. And, like, if he figures it out, like, what with the bat and all, he really can turn into the quote-unquote five-tool player. Like, he'll have everything.
All right, good. I'm with you about that. Jesse, six players left to go, and let's only spend about a minute on each. I think we go back and forth. Like, out of these six players, I'll pick one, talk about it, then you pick one, you talk about it, and we'll go from there. So those players, Nathan Lucas, Joey Loperfido, Davis Schneider, Jonathan Classe, Stuart Broa, and Alan Roden, I all included up in this mix. We'll just alternate, go through one and the other. I want to start with Nathan Lucas, who might be the forgotten guy here out of these players, but people will remember that John Schneider had him batting leadoff down the stretch last year. He's 30 years old, and the whole conversation with Nathan Lucas when he was playing in September was all like, well, this guy's playing for 29 other teams. He might not have a fit with the Toronto Blue Jays next year. I disagree, dude. Like, since he joined the Toronto Blue Jays organization, all this guy has done is hit. He's had WRC pluses of 130 or better every year in Buffalo. His brief time in the majors last year, he hit over 300, had a home run. Like I said, John Schneider had him hitting leadoff down the stretch last year. I think Nathan Lucas can, even if he is just a league average hitter at this point, hitting from the left side and spraying the ball around with his contact skills, could be a very impact piece right now that not many people, even in Blue Jays world, are talking about right now. And I wanted to throw some love to Nathan Lucas.
Oh, definitely. Like, he definitely has shown, like, he is an MLB player, just has never got the real run. And, like, I feel like he would have been on the roster way earlier if he didn't tear that ligament in his thumb.
Yeah, and he's fully healthy from that, too. So I do think there is potential he could be an impact player here. But, Jesse, pick your player. Loperfido, Schneider, Classe, Broa, or Roden. Who do you want to bring up?
I'll talk about John Classe, the major piece he got back in the Jimmy Garcia trade. And as people have watched it, I've been so high on this guy. Like, you can put me on top of Mount Everest how much I've been praising him. I feel like he will break camp as our opening day center fielder. I feel like he is going be with the Jays all season. Like, he won't go down to the minors, even when Varsho comes back. This guy has power. He has elite speed. Like, I would love to see a foot race between him and O'Neill Cruz and LA Dela Cruz. Like, see who's the fastest player, faster. Like, his speed is elite. He's in the minors, he stole 79 bases. I don't care what people say, that yes, it's the minors, but 79 stolen bases, he can do that in the majors. Maybe not 79. I can see him with a, like I said one episode ago, I can see him stealing 50 bases this year from the Jays, and it's been years since that's happened. We saw glimpses too in his 8 games. Like, even he hit a homer for the Jays. Like, he showed that he has a pop. He can play solid defense. If he can get on base more, I feel like Jimenez could cause so much havoc, like on the base pass, that could give those holes for the guys in the top of the order if he's not our leadoff hitter.
Yeah, he's so young still, so he'd have to have a very good spring, I think, to make the team out of camp here. But, like, Jesse, you look at the tools that Jonathan Clase has, and I see what you see here, right? The sprint speed in his limited time up was the fastest on the Blue Jays. Nobody ran faster than what Jonathan Clase did last year. And even if you look at the bat, like, in terms of his average bat speed, now, he only had a handful of at-bats here, so take the small sample caveat in two sides here, but he had the fourth fastest average swing speed. That's higher than Bo Bichette. That's higher than George Springer. That's higher than Alejandro Kirk. Like, I think only Vladdy, Loperfido, and Barger were higher than him. Jonathan Clase was next on that list. And if you look at, like, the percentage of swings he had that were quote-unquote competitive swings, he also led the Blue Jays in that metric, which is just, that's not something that happens by accident. And, you know, small sample caveats apply for Jonathan Clase, but there is a very real opportunity here that he could be a high-impact, great Blue Jay for years to come.
Oh, definitely. And that's, like, again, like, that's why I've been so high on him. And, like, when we made that trade with the Mariners, I was shocked they gave us him for Jimmy Garcia.
Yeah, just because he came up to the minors and struggled his first few weeks there. You know, Addison Barger did that. Mike Trout did that, for goodness sake. Not saying Class A is going to be Mike Trout, but there is a precedent for that of guys coming up to the major league. So I'm with you, Jesse. I'm excited to see what Jonathan Class A can do with his time in the big leagues. I will touch next on Joey Loperfido. And we talked about him a few episodes ago because it looked like he had made a change in his swing, right? Which was definitely needed. Joey Loperfido struck out more than 30% of the time last year. Does do some things very well. He swings the bat hard. He can have for the hit for power. I think we've mentioned before that he was leading all of baseball, not just the minor leagues or major leagues, all of baseball in home runs through the month of April last year. Then his numbers kind of took a touchdown. Maybe he got tired. Maybe he changed his approach a little bit. But we talk about the offensive tools for Class A. Joey Loperfido has those as well. He's still young enough. He's going to get a run. The defense is excellent in left field for Joey Loperfido. I want to personally see, I think, those strikeouts cut down first before I buy in on the hype. But I'm a sucker for upside. I love upside. And Joey Loperfido has as much of it as any other player in here. Tell me quickly what you think on Loperfido going into this year.
Oh, definitely has a lot of upside. And, like, again, he was a big piece of that Kikuchi trade. And, like, I feel like if we didn't, like, if they had just traded Loperfido for Kikuchi, we would still be as happy. But we obviously got Wagner and Bloss. Like, the tools are there. And, like, yeah, so it's Pacific Coast League. But, like, the guy hit 13, I think it was, like, 10 home runs in 13 games. Like,
yeah, something ridiculous.
He has the tools. It's just now if he can cut down on those strikeouts, it'll be a game changer.
Mm-hmm. Him and Addison Barger, who we're going to talk about next episode with Addison Barger, very similar players too. Very intriguing guys, very intriguing skill sets. I hope that the Blue Jays are willing to give both of these players an extended run this year because the potential they could have is immaculate. Like, I don't think it would surprise anyone if later in his career, Joey Loperfido had a season where he hit 30 bombs. Like, I don't think any of us are expecting it this year, but at some point in his career, you could see that outcome for Joey Loperfido.
Oh, definitely. I can even see him possibly, like, with his speed too, be a 30-30 guy 1 year too.
Yeah, sure. Put it in the bag. Unlikely, of course, but put it in the bag of what is potential up there. All right, Jesse, pick your next guy. Alan Rodon, Davis Schneider, and I guess Stuart Baroa, who's probably a little lower on the depth chart, but which one do you want to talk about?
I'll go with the Buffalo Bisons MVP and Alan Rodon, a player we've been hearing a lot in trade rumors because of what he has done since he's come, like, gone up in the minors. All he's done is hit. He's played solid defense. He's a lefty. Like, he's very toolsy. Again, like, it has, like, lost me. Like, again, I feel like if the Jays weren't sticking around his service time, that would have been up last year in September because they didn't want to give him, like, lose a year of arbitration or anything like that. I feel like if Class A is up, I feel like Alan will be the first person they call up if they're, like, say, Loperfido or one of our outfielders goes down. Like, guy, all he does is hit. has a good eye, plays solid defense. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, I'm getting major Spencer Horwitz vibes from Allen Roden. Last year, remember, he's now 25 years old. Like, Spencer Horwitz was buried down there, and the whole thing was the Blue Jays wanted to see more power from him. But 16 home runs in the minors for Allen Roden combined, AA and AAA combined last year. A lot of the exit velocity numbers and his quality of contact numbers all scream very good for Allen Roden. He's just not on the 40-man roster yet, so something will have to happen to get Allen Roden on that 40-man roster. But if you are looking for pure upside, Allen Roden's got to have as much upside as probably a Joey Loperfido, as an Addison Barger. Like, he's another name here that for a Blue Jays farm system that's really lacking quality, Allen Roden's got to be the one name on this list that could come up and provide a genuine impact on this team. So, yeah, all systems go for Allen Roden.
Oh, definitely.
Just want to make sure he can get on the field and playing, and a good spring training will go a long way from that for Allen Roden if he is not traded this offseason. But now I'm starting to think the Blue Jays roll into camp with him, which will be good. Jesse, we're wrapping up. We're running out of time here, but any thoughts on Davis Schneider or Stuart Broa or anyone else down in the minors in their outfield?
Not a whole lot on anything really in the minors, but I just hope for Davis Schneider he can figure it out. And give us glimpses and more often some of that Babe Schneider-ness and not be just a walking out like he was most of this year. Baroa, you have great speed. Let's see if he can actually put that to the ball. And yeah.
Yeah, I want to love Davis Schneider, but Jesse, man, it was hard to watch Davis Schneider down the stretch last year. Very tough. And aside from his like big stretch where he, when he came up against Boston and his home run against Hader, he really hasn't done a lot. He's going to need to make some adjustments, and that is something I'm going to be watching for throughout spring and early in the season for Davis Schneider, because I love the guy, right? I want to root for the guy. I want him to do well, but the baseball player we saw last year for the extended period we saw from him seems tough, and we want to see something a little better from Davis Schneider. I'm with you on that. Anything else, Jesse, in terms of the outfield? Maybe do you have a favorite prospect in the system that you want to keep an eye on that plays outfield?
I think the one that I fell in love because of just how badly he like pimped a home run this year is RJ Schreck. Like, he's a corner outfielder and impossible first baseman, but just I feel like that'd be a name that we could be hearing a lot of possibly coming up into possibly Buffalo by the end of this year, maybe even make an appearance if depending on how badly our depth has gone bad in the outfield. Hopefully not, but he could possibly make turn heads this year, I feel like.
A name to watch in the minor league system. I am keeping my tabs on Dasan Brown, who got up to New Hampshire last year. Power speed guy, a Canadian, I believe, as well, if he got in there. 23 years old. This is the year, if he's going to make a prospect bump, that this can do it. The former third-round pick might be able to make a jump this season for the Toronto Blue Jays. All right, that is going to do it for our episode here today. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We hope by the end of this week we can have a Roky Sasaki episode, a Pete Alonso episode, an Anthony Santander episode, a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extension episode, a lot of stuff to come between now and the opening of spring training, which is a little under a month away. Jesse, anything else you want to throw out here before we get out of here?
Hopefully we get to see you guys more often than not with all these episodes that could be coming your way. But if not, stay tuned until next weekend. Always, yes. Thanks for watching us.
And we are hoping to have a special guest on next week. Stay tuned for that. We will announce that as we get a little closer. But for Jesse Tricio, I'm Jesse Burrell. Thank you all for listening and posting along with us. And once again, let's go Blue Jays.
Thanks, guys. We'll be right back.